been, because we're doing it every single week for what is now nearly 2 years, I reckon we've racked up a significant amount of airtime. So it's almost like being in the pilot seat or driving a car. Like, there's only so much theory you can do. What you've got to do is actually get behind the wheel and drive it before you get comfortable with it. So yeah, I totally get it that people might feel a little bit intimidated for the first time. Yeah, Martin, we're talking about you, mate. Don't worry about it. We'll call you on screen when the thing is live. You just got to make sure your webcam is on, and you should be good. All right. Anyway, we are live, everyone. Welcome to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 79. We are bringing it to you every Friday. And I hope you like the new time, by the way. We're going to try and do midday in GMT, BST, if we're still in that time zone. Hopefully, we can still get a decent amount in Europe. And we're going to have to try and find another way to connect with the folks in the US. Reason why I'm doing this, by the way, is simply because I think we're finishing the week earlier. The pandemic economy, no one's working until 5 o'clock on Friday. What are you talking about? People are checking out at like 3:30, 2:00, 1:00. You know what I mean? They're leaving. So I think we've got extra time, and I don't want to basically go and do a show when you've got other stuff to do, your weekend to get on with. So we're starting a bit earlier as the default time, 12 midday. Okay, so before we kick off, as usual, we do a bit of AV checking. So folks who can hear me on Crowdcast, just please say hello. I think you can. Lots of activity in the chat stream there. But just let me know whether you can hear me or Adam. That would be very good. Just say hello in the chat stream. That'd be cool. We are multicasting to LinkedIn Live. So LinkedIn, if you're there and you can hear me, just say hello. Let me know. You can hear me okay there. And finally, we're at a Facebook group as well. 3,000 members in the Facebook group, folks. If you can hear me there, have I gone live there? Yes, I have. Just say hello or give me a quick thumbs up or something. Let me know I can hear you okay. Okay, I think that's more or less everyone's coming through loud and clear. Thank you very much, Martin. Perfect. Okay, so before we kick off, quick thank you to our sponsors this week. Episode 79 is sponsored by our friends at Codility. Codility are a tech testing platform, folks. So if you're hiring software engineers and you need to validate whether they meet the mark in terms of the technical standard you're looking for, Codility are one of the premier services out there that help you do it. They've got a zillions of tests for every kind of language, and you can also benchmark it against everyone who has taken that test at a global level. So when you're hiring someone, you can actually plot them on a graph to say what percentile they're at in terms of their technical competence. So check out Codility if you are indeed hiring for the software engineers. Moving on to the show. We're with Adam Gordon, of course, back in the co-pilot seat. Good to see you, Adam. How is life? How is things? How's the week?
Yeah, good week. I'll tell you what we did yesterday, which was really good. We did our first virtual offsite. First day of the last quarter of the year, and there's 16 of us, and we got everybody together online. I did an hour's kind of revised. Here's what the strategy and the mission is, and then we did meet your pet, then we meet your pet or kid.
Then we had interchangeable some, those two, right?
Yeah. We then had some guests come. We had a TA leader, a recruitment employer branding leader, a sourcing leader, and a recruitment agency leader came and spent 20 minutes with us, just a kind of AMA type of thing. We introduced a performance and engagement initiative that we're about to start working on with John Stanners, and we finished off with a quiz, and it was a really good day. Everybody enjoyed it, I think. So I've got some feedback, so it worked well. Couple of learnings: make sure you've got some breaks. Like, make sure you've got like small, like 15-minute breaks pretty regularly throughout it, because people don't want to be on Zoom for like all day. Bit of a later start, bit of an earlier finish, that type of thing. Don't try and do too much. It was good.
You know what? I'm really pleased to hear you pull that off. I think loads of companies are doing it, and I just wonder whether this may be the sort of almost like half event, half internal. You know, you bring in external in, and it's a bit of a fun thing, bit of learning, bit of bonding. It replaces a lot of that you know, formalized weekly meeting, the AG, you know, the weekly meeting that you usually have. It's like an all hands type of affair. I think really good bonding. So you guys are doing what, a quarterly rhythm on that? Is that their plan?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we do all hands every Monday morning. We do stand-ups as well. God, we've got all the terms, haven't we? This is going to be quarterly. So that's the first one we've done it.
And, yeah.
You know, it'll just get better and better.
Yeah, I think so. I took part in a few of these more conference style, but, you know, internal for customers type of stuff. Yesterday, that was really good fun. And I think I'm going to do one for VMware next week. So just I'll be one of the people turning up to give a talk or whatnot. So, yeah, I think exciting. And, you know, it's great to see employers take on some of this, not just relying on event organizers to sort things out, but, you know, almost custom making their own online experience and cultivating their culture that way. So fantastic stuff.
I mean, the king of that is in our industry is Jerome Turnick, who, of course, does his internal events, but then basically turns them into an external event as well. He's built a whole brand out of it, and gets other companies to pay for it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's emerged into like a huge conference now. But they do spend money. It's not like a small budget. So, credit to them.
Yeah, but other people spend money as well.
It's true. I think they make up a lot of it coming back, but that's a smart way to play it. You know, you get other sponsors to come in. Maybe that's another way for companies to generate leads, build brand, etc. You ally with other businesses and you get involved in each other's events. You know, why not? Cool. Anyway, let's get into it. Do we need to talk about Donald Trump and COVID-19, or should we skip that one?
Well, I mean, you know, I hope he doesn't die. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, the only person I won't even mention him, but there was one person on my newsfeed that said, yeah, I hope it's fatal. I thought that's gone a bit too far, Dan. But yeah, Donald Trump, COVID positive, reported yesterday. Interesting. 2020, just bring it on. I mean, whatever, you know, things are going to happen here as the thing you expect the least. So it is what it is. But we'll be talking about the US presidential election on the 6th of November. Actually, we're going to have a special on that. So it's going to be focused on what the hell the world looks like, depending on who wins. And that's going to be very exciting for us to review.
Well, having watched the Comey rule over the last couple of days, And how much the Hillary emails thing made a big impact on the last election, this could be the thing that makes a big impact on this election as well. He's not going to be able to do his rallies. How's he going to communicate in debates? How's he going to run the military? How's he going to do, you know, all the things that he's meant to be doing in the next, a month away?
Yeah, the main thing is he's not going to be able to showcase. Or I'll tell you what, he's probably going to start live streaming. I reckon he'll start doing that. There's no way you're going to shut him up for 14 days. Not going to happen. No. Anyway, let's get on with it. Brain Food newsletter. Did you read it last week? And if you did, what was interesting, man?
Yeah, I mean, I really loved the blog on Andreessen Horowitz's website about deep job platforms.
Right.
I think it's a new one. I think that's been about 6 months ago, something like that they actually wrote that. And I loved it then and I love it now. So basically what they're saying is the future for LinkedIn and Indeed, LinkedIn and Indeed are not the future of online job finding. The future is going to be much, much more niche focused communities. And an example that I've got is something like Candidate. Based in London, Alex Van Claveren's business.
Yes, I know them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, starts with a K, Candidate, mm-hmm. And they're effectively a place to go and find jobs.
Sales, isn't
it? Startups. Well, it's any non-software engineering job in startups in London.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not sure if it's just London. No, it's not. It's Berlin and other places as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and up until the last kind of 18 months, I think people would have been more likely to go to Indeed and LinkedIn and places like that. And the world's going to get much more structure around where is the place to go for, you know, the type of job. So that's good because it's going to create better understanding for candidates and employers around how to just get connected with each other.
Yeah, and you know what? It's similar to how communities work as well. You know, like we initially thought you dive into the big swamp of a social network and that's your community, but it got too big. You can't be a community of 1 billion people on Facebook or whatever. So you end up finding groups of your interest and you end up going there. And I think that's what's going to happen in the jobs world. You know, it's like the big Indeeds of this world, the big aggregators, LinkedIn. It's too big to swim in. So you're going to seek out platforms that are niche and specific, and that you know, vast majority of opportunities there are going to be relevant to you rather than have to, you know, rely on something algorithmically delivered to you via recommendation. We all know LinkedIn recommendations doesn't make sense, right? You get delivered all kinds of stuff that is like, where did that come from? So even they can't get that right. So yeah, very interesting by Andreessen Horowitz. Share the link, have a look. Okay, what else is interesting, man?
I liked Tim Sackett's blog about influencers or analysts and
Yes.
who has the most impact on your business. And you know, they are totally different things. And analysts are, you know, as the CEO of a tech company, analysts are people who will help me to generate better rapport with investors and partners and people like that, whereas the influencers are more useful downstream at the customer kind of level.
Yep.
So it, really interesting article though, because if you're not in, I mean, if you're not in the supply chain somewhere, if you're a recruiter and you're not somewhere further down the supply chain, then you might not know the nuances of how it all works, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, Tim Sackett, if you don't know him, Tim is a great guy. He publishes a lot. He was on the Braintree Tribune actually, and he told me that he writes every day as a result of the inspiration that his high school teacher gave him. And that was just the discipline he has. And I think part of the reason why he's able to come up with very interesting new angles is because he does write every day. And that forces him to think in different ways. And he posted a really cool article on this issue about how these two categories of people might be different. Industry influencers, industry analysts, what's important, how do you interact with them? Super interesting.
Yeah,
What? Why
absolutely.
did you why do you take the mic out, man? I can now hear myself through your thing.
Oh, I'm trying to do two things at once here. I'm getting people on the chat saying that I'm much quieter than you. So I was.
Well, you have to stick the earpods back in.
Right. Okay.
Put the volume back up, man.
Okay. So the next thing was oh, that list of 100. You love big lists.
Yeah, absolutely.
That big list of diversity-focused communities in tech. That was really great because, you know, so many. I mean, just this morning, two companies have made contact with me to say, right, we want to build pipelines for diverse candidates. You know, where's the place that we can hear?
Immediate
So.
use, yep, immediate use. I'll just share it in the link there. It's by an organization called Sifted EU. And that's actually I really like this list, not only because they've built it, but they've actually commentated on each and every single record to say a little bit about what it's all about. So I think if you are recruiting and you care about diversification of workforce, this is a really good go-to resource. And you know, diversity sourcing, advertising those places, be a valuable member of community in those areas. That's going to help you diversify pipeline for sure. So again, just share it in the chat screen. Take a look. Make sure that you know, you avail yourself of these things if you care about this.
Yeah.
Cool. One more, man, before we get on to the topic of the show.
Well, I've got to thank you for including real talent
Okay.
in. So I just about 2 months ago, back in the middle of summer, probably 3 months ago, something that occurred to me is that we there are very talented. Sorry, there are people outside of the business world who are doing a lot to focus on identifying and then nurturing talent in lots of different ways. And so I've created some short videos with members of parliament, people who run sports teams like at a high level, teachers, Lots of interesting people, and I'm sharing that. Sorry, this is a bit of a self.
Isn't it? It's fine though, but because the reason why I put it in is not. I just think it's really useful. Because I love the fact it's a small, it's a short commit, 15 minutes. But I think there's so much value to be speaking to people that aren't specialist recruiters, but nonetheless have angles on recruiting that's interesting. And in particular with this one with Trevor, it's because sports is always recruiting. It's about scouting, it's about talent development, it's about team play. I think we can learn so much about how sports clubs actually do recruit and train and develop and build teams. You know, I think that's a really great example to take on. So I really enjoyed that, and I think people should pay attention to it. So yeah, keep doing them, man. I think they're great.
There's about five more that are in the pipeline that have been filmed and are going to be, you know, going live soon. The next one's a teacher.
Right. So, again, talent development, you know, amazing. Yeah. Okay, cool. Right. Let's get on with it. Alternative careers for recruiters, man. I did a poll on this on LinkedIn about maybe a month or so ago. Got loads of people voting in terms of what is the most obvious career path for recruiters to go to. And the reason why I put this out there is because, you know, with all the optimism in the world, the wrong thing for us to do is to be like falsely optimistic. You know, the world is going to be tough. It's going to be tough for a long time. Global growth is going to slow significantly. And that's going to mean all of the recruiting plans that we had and all the recruiters that we needed are going to be slowed down or shelved or what have you. And it should mean, logically, that there's going to be a bunch of us that might have to leave the industry or at least investigate other opportunities. So I put it out there to say, okay, you're a recruiter now. What kind of job path do you see yourself going toward? And I put HR, I put marketing, sales, and then other. I think LinkedIn only gives you a sort of four options. I probably should have put other things there as well, but HR came top, and then sales came second, and marketing surprisingly came in at 12% or something, and other beat that. So anyway, quick thoughts on this before I bring our first tranche of guests on. Adam, you kind of have left recruitment and you set up a business, didn't you? And that's one way of doing it, I guess, being an entrepreneur. I don't want to talk about that in particular, though, because that is kind of, I wouldn't say it's a cop-out plan, but it's not an obvious plan for many people to set up a tech company. What other options were you thinking of when you know, the thought, right, that's the last CV I'm ever going to read, or, you know, that's the last call I'm ever going to make?
Well, that was a long time back. I was a recruiter for 3 years until 2002, and then I moved into recruitment marketing. So I moved into marketing with a global recruitment marketing agency, which is now called Havas People.
But tell us about that, Alan, because that isn't an obvious move back then, I would say.
Well, I wasn't that interested in candidates, to be honest, and you know I didn't enjoy talking to them about what they wanted with their careers, especially as it was all newly qualified chartered accountants who've been told that they're the best for the last 3 years, and you know we're about to enter the actual real world. But what I did enjoy was writing adverts for the back of the Glasgow Herald. I enjoyed. At that time, it was email was starting to become important. Monster board, I think it was called at the time, was starting to become, you know, something that where people would look for. And I enjoyed writing adverts. And I studied marketing at university, and so I wanted to work in the talent attraction area.
Yep. You know. Yep. So, that's cool.
Yep. But my route in was I joined that company as a business development manager. So I joined in a sales
capacity. Yeah. Interesting. That's the obvious. It turned out that was the obvious transition. If you're an agency recruiter, the obvious transition is not into HR, it's into sales. Whereas if you're an in-house recruiter now, the obvious transition is moving into HR. And then marketing kind of falls somewhere in between those two. But there is another way. And another way we're seeing a lot of this happening, people are going into the coaching business. You know, recruiters, that basically part of our job has always been to speak to candidates, think about career paths, give them advice, give them that type of advisory coaching service. I actually did this myself when I first left recruiting, as almost a career coach type of thing. And I wanted to explore this. I think this is a growing market. It's kind of setting yourself up as a business, single person, trying to trade as being an individual that is giving individuals advice, I would say. As a coach, performance coach, health coach, mental health coach, etc., whatever type of coaching, I think this is a growth area for us going forward. So I'm going to bring on Michelle Flynn, who I knew is like a very famous recruiter when we're in London when we first started. She's now a mental health coach, I believe. And I'm also going to bring on Joe McCatty, who is like one of the legends on Brain Food Live, because she's always there. And she's always like doing massive support on it, but it seems that she is also moving down the coaching career path as well. So let's bring these two ladies on and have a think about what coaching world looks like. How do you make the transition? How does it all work? So there she is, Michelle. Wow.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Everyone can hear you, Michelle. Absolutely.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, great to see you. It's been absolute ages. I can't remember the last time we caught up, maybe 4 or 5 years or so ago.
It was over a cup of tea in on Great Eastern Street. I remember
something
that.
Like that. Yeah, something. You're looking great and great to see you. And there's Joe McCatty. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing great. Hello, everyone from Melbourne.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like super late for you, Joe. So thank you for turning up to the show. So listen, I want to reason why I want to bring you two together is because essentially moving down the coaching track is super interesting. I get a lot of recruiters that are asking me, like, how do I do this? And yeah, I don't know. And I just thought the best thing to do would be to actually speak to people who've moved down that track. Let's find out how that move was made and what the challenges were. I think it'd be quite interesting for people thinking about it to understand what problems that you can expect to encounter if they decide to set up a coaching business. So Michelle, as a person who's gone and done it, 2-3 years in down that line, I wonder whether you could tell us a bit about your journey and how that all worked out.
Absolutely. So quick kind of recap, I've got 8.5 years at Computer Futures back in the day, as Adam mentioned, where we sort of actually put adverts in newspapers rather than on LinkedIn. I then moved across and actually became an in-house recruitment manager before it actually really sort of existed as it does now. And then 9 years ago now, I set up my own little in-house recruitment business. But 6 years ago, I started on a health journey where basically my health was failing. And through personal sort of discovery, started working with a health coach who literally kind of changed my life. I don't get sick anymore. I'm not exhausted. I've sort of managed to lose weight without having to count calories, and decided that actually I wanted to help people sort of not get sick in the first place. So I retrained to be a health coach, didn't really know where I was going to go with that. And then I went, actually, makes real sense to work with recruiters because I understand the pressures, I understand the lifestyle, I'm not going to make any judgment on the lifestyle. So about 2 years ago now, I started up my own little coaching business. It started off mainly as health coaching, but now it's developed into basically anything, whether that's careers, relationships, mindset, performance, morning routine, stress management. So it was my own personal journey. I didn't have any plans to really move out of recruitment because I love it. And what a great sort of a great job. And I still do have my own little recruitment business on the side, but most of my time is spent doing coaching now.
That's amazing. So basically what you're saying, Michelle, it came from a personal set of challenges you had. And going through that process, and you know, thank goodness you managed to get through it and find some solutions there for physical health and so on. You realize then that this is what you want to do to support other people. And you set up this business. It must have been quite difficult to do though, because how do you start thinking about charging money? You know, it's like you're used to being a recruiter. So how does it work? How did you flip into that scenario where suddenly it becomes a legit business for you?
Yeah, well, first it's realizing that I was never going to earn the same money that I could in recruitment. But having been in recruitment so long and being quite sensible with money, that was something that I could work with. And if I'm completely honest, I had no business plan. I had no idea. Someone said to me, oh, you're looking well. What is it that you're doing? Could you help me? And it just sort of snowballed. And then companies started saying, oh, could you come and do a talk with our team? So if I'm honest, I fell into it. I didn't really know what I was doing. But fortunately, having worked in not only the recruitment industry, but also the tech industry, which was my special area for so long, I've got a very large network. So word of mouth is now where I get my clients from.
Yeah, I love it. And this is where I think recruiters have a distinct advantage, because we're used to, firstly, have a bigger network than anybody. And secondly, we should know how to activate that. So it should give a lot of people encouragement. Joe, let's go to you on this, because this is a journey you're just starting, isn't it? Because working in recruitment previously, and now you're kind of stepping into the coaching thing. Explain to the audience exactly where you're at with everything right now.
Sure. So for me, I've had almost a couple of decades of experience in recruitment, and I was actually a scientist by background. So I took a career switch myself, and I haven't looked back since. I found people more interesting. And so starting at an agency, I also transitioned into executive search, and then I took the plunge and joined internal. And if I look back, that's probably where the coaching mindset started, because I started to support people within the business to find opportunities internally. And so I've been doing it over the years as an internal recruiter. And then over the last 4 years consulting, going from client to client as an internal TA, I was doing it by default pro bono for a lot of people who were coming to me and saying, Joe, I heard you spoke to such and such. Could I just have a chat to you? And so more formally, like Michelle, a couple of years ago, I started to do it as a side passion. And I thought at some stage, maybe, well, let's see what happens. And to be honest, it was COVID. And, you know, from having work to then not having any clients the next day, it made me look at career coaching 100% of the time. And so I was kind of forced into working on my passion, if you like. And I'm enjoying it. I don't know what's happening in terms of, you know, the income stream. That's the tricky part, if you like, because I'm just starting out. It's only been a few months where I've done it 100%, but I've been the happiest I've ever been in my career, to be honest. So that's where my calling came into, wanting to be a career coach.
One of the interesting silver linings about COVID is it really has accelerated a lot of people to doing what they were planning to do in 2, 3, 5 years time, and they've actually just gone, no, I'm just going to do it now. Great.
Yeah, I agree. It's a big accelerant. That's what we talk about in terms of accelerating sort of technological change. But it's accelerated all kinds of like business decisions and life decisions we've been putting off. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I want to retire to a beach. I'm seeing people go to the beach now. You know, it's like, why wait? We don't have the time. You might as well pull the trigger now. So that's fantastic. Listen, I want to just get straight into it, because the revenue stream is the critical thing. Because working for your passion is great, but it's not sustainable unless you can find a way to make money. And I just think on coaching, probably the biggest challenge I foresee is how do you charge money for a person that's asking for help? That seems like one of the biggest, like I would have a mental block on that. But obviously people are prepared to pay and you should charge. How do you get over that mental block, and actually what do you charge for it? So don't give me a number, but how do you calculate the number? You know, go to you first, Michelle, on that.
So when I first started, I just kind of almost picked a bit of a number out of the air and thought, well, what would someone pay for a haircut, or what would someone pay for a personal training session? And then actually, as I got more confident with my experience, as I built out my client base, as I was getting the success stories and the recommendations written on LinkedIn and sort of the testimonials, I started to put my price up, because ultimately, actually, when it comes to asking people to make changes in their life, by charging them, they're almost more likely to actually stick to it. It's the same with a personal trainer. If you're paying someone to go and work out for an hour with your trainer, you're likely to work out harder than you would if you went to the gym yourself. So I sort of increased my price to the point that I felt comfortable that it was a fair price to the person, but also that it would make financial sense for me, that I could then afford to pay my bills.
Yeah, cool. How about you, Joe? I know you're just starting on with this, so probably very, very early to say, but what are your early thoughts on how the pricing model works for a coaching business that you have?
So for me, being a scientist, I like to collate information. So I spoke to so many different people, different kind of coaches. And I also have a coach myself. So I already knew what I was
ask her. It's like, you don't need to ask, you're paying her, right? You know, exactly. Just look at your invoice and that's the number.
And that's what actually gave me the nudge to start off doing my business in the first place, having a coach myself. And so having collated all that information, I have gathered the insights and then figured out, okay, how much time do I need to invest for this particular thing that I'm doing for this individual? Is it an interview that they're going to prepare for? Or is it, oh my gosh, I have no idea what I want to do with my life anymore. And I, there's a certain framework that you take into from that starting point to that point where they know where they want to go and giving them that strategy. So it's hours, or if you like, minutes that you invest and relating it back to all the information and research I had done and going, right, I have the self-confidence now. I know I'm adding value to this individual. I've done it now repeatedly. I've got testimonials. So, you know, having that inner self-confidence, you just kind of get to the stage of, I can help you and here are my rates. If you're interested, come along. Yeah, but that's a bit of a journey. It does take some time.
I think the confidence in the number is really important, isn't it? Because everyone feels like, hey, how can I charge this number? It feels too expensive most of the time. But you have to commit to that number and divorce yourself from the feeling on it. I liked what both of you said, but particularly the part where, I forget which one of you said it, it's like, how do you calculate your own requirement? Because that should actually be the main reason what the number is. It's not what this person applies to the values, what your value for your time and expertise is. And if people don't want to pay it, the market's big enough, they can go shop elsewhere or do elsewhere. And you'll find, you know, your positioning in the right place. Okay, moving quickly on, we've got loads of guests. I want to ask one more question before we bring our next tranche of people on. What if you get a complaint? So traditional stuff, okay, I'm selling whatever, people complain, it's like, all right, refund it or buy another or whatnot. But coaching is like really different because it's like relationship driven. It's like what happens when you get someone who's dissatisfied with the service? I mean, how do you front that up? Michelle, probably you're better answering this because you've had more experience on it, but have you had that experience?
Fortunately, not yet. Well, not that anyone has told me. And my clients keep coming back for more, whether that's the one-to-one coaching or whether that's the corporate talk. So sort of touch wood, it's going okay. But if someone did speak to me and say that they weren't happy with the service, the question would be, well, is it about how I'm working with them? Am I motivating them in the right way? Am I holding them accountable? Maybe I'm actually setting them goals that are sort of too big too quickly, and we would work around what the challenge was. Ultimately, if it's that they don't connect with me and they don't feel that I'm the right coach with them, because that's something that's really important, then have your money back, go and find a coach. Maybe I could recommend a coach that would be better suited, because for me, I don't want to take somebody's money unless actually they're getting what they want out of it, because that doesn't make me feel good.
Yeah, very, very good.
Yeah. Rightly put. Yeah, I would. Yeah, sorry, go on.
No, go ahead. Joe, you're going to say something?
Yeah, it's all about building rapport, and you know that you have to have that relationship with an individual, and you also have to understand the form of readiness. Are they really ready to make a change, whatever change that they're wanting to? And if they're not, then they're not going to listen to anything that you have to say. It doesn't matter how much you coach them, how many sessions you have, they have to be ready to make that step themselves, and you're just helping them along. You're giving them that nudge. You're literally just showing them the pathway, but they have to take it themselves. So yeah, there's a bit in that. And I always do like a clarity session, or some people call it a free coaching session. Really, it's just to understand, can I coach this individual? Am I going to be able to add value to them or not? And then if not, as Michelle said, then you can point them in a different direction. Yeah.
You know what? It's a fascinating segment. I do think it's growing. I think recruiters do have the capability of doing it because of the high touch, the empathy that typically recruiters have built over time. That capability, I think, translates really well to this style of work. And I think it's a growing segment. I'm going to keep monitoring how this, you know, personal coaching segment grows, because there's so many dimensions. I mean, for instance, Michelle, you mentioned it was physical health to begin with, but actually, you know, that's obviously linked to mental health, career wellness, social wellness, your relationship. All of these things are all interwoven. And maybe we'll see a future where coaching, you get different coaches for different sort of elements of life. Okay, cool. Listen, we're going to keep bringing people on and off. So thank you very much, Michelle and Joe. If you can hang around for the rest of the show, please do so. I'm sure there'll be questions to ask. People want to ask them. By the way, put it on the ask a question section below if you want to do that. But let's say goodbye on screen to Michelle firstly and to Joe. Thank you for being on.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Great to see you guys. And we're going to straight away bring on another angle because one of the guys here has told me, Hung, I'm moving house today. Can I come in a bit earlier? And I'm saying, Rob, if you're moving house, why are you committing to doing a live stream? So anyway, this is Rob Long, the famous Rob Long from Workable. I'm going to bring him on right now. He's obviously gone to do a different career path. Very interesting to hear those two talk about coaching. But I want to talk about vendor side. So this is another career path people can go to. You're a recruiter. You stop selling candidates. Instead, you start selling software. How do you do that? So there he is, Rob Long. Give us a quick pan. What is the room looking like?
I'm using the windowsill as a desk. I have no furniture yet.
Right, I see. You're mid-move. That's amazing. Hopefully you get it complete today, Rob, and we'll get you off and running as soon as you can. By the way, for the people who don't know you, Rob, quickly introduce yourself, who you are, and what do you do now?
I'm Rob Long. I am a VP of EMEA for Workable Recruiting Software, if people know. That's my job.
Yeah, amazing. And Rob, you know what? You, in my opinion, and this may be sample bias from my side, but you're one of the very first people that I personally knew that moved into from recruiting, because I think you were working for Exec Search at one point, weren't you? And then you moved into this BD role, I think it was, when it began for what was an emerging ATS at the time. So I want to just get back to that young Rob. Like, when did you realize, I'm never going to try and place another candidate. Had enough.
It was probably when I realized that I'd been doing recruitment for about 4 years and I'd been in four different companies in that time, just jumping around. So
you hopped a bit.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
I graduated, went into a graduate accountancy course with sort of BDO, one of the sort of big five international companies. Did that for 18 months, didn't much enjoy that. So left there, and I guess what a lot of people say, fell into recruitment. My two housemates did it, my brother did it, so it seemed like the obvious thing to do. Enjoyed it enough to some extent, but there was something missing. So I just kept on moving from one company to another, thinking, oh, well, these will be more interesting clients, and ended up at an exec search firm called The Up Group, who typically worked with high growth sort of startups back then. I think they worked with more sort of corporate companies now, larger companies, but back then it was very much kind of working in the startup scene around sort of London. So I was working with candidates there and companies that were kind of B2B or B2C tech companies, high growth VC backed, and they seemed to be enjoying their jobs more than I was, and they seemed to be more interesting jobs than the one I was doing, or found more interesting. So as I got to that point about 11 months into that role where I was like, oh, I think it's probably time to leave this one too, I had to really think then about what am I going to do? I've been an accountant for less than 2 years, a recruiter for less than four different companies. So it took about 3 months just to sort of stop working and sort of take a reset. So went and met a lot of different companies, thought that sales was the way to go because it was the obvious transition for me out of agency side recruiting into tech companies, knew that tech companies were where I wanted to be. Went and met companies, bigger companies, smaller companies, to see sort of what felt about right. And ultimately got introduced to Workable by a candidate that I placed from the Up Group, whose boss at the time was one of the angel investors. So Workable then was, I think, 10 people at the time, based in Athens, seed funded, wasn't charging yet for Workable. So it was about a 9-month-old company. So it was an interesting move. I think a lot of people kind of wondered why you join a Greek company startup at sort of the peak of the Greek crisis. But it fitted well. Like, it was early stage sales role. They were happy to take a chance on someone who didn't have that sort of sales experience background. I knew the product that was being sold. I knew the people that we'd be selling it to. So it was quite a nice fit. So that's how I ended up at Workable. And it was in sort of we have this early stage product. They wanted to hire somebody in a metropolitan city to go and see what they could do with it, go and sell it. And that was my role then, was to sort of try and get Workable known in sort of the London recruiting industry, sell Workable. And then obviously many roles later, we come sort of nearly think 7.5 years since I joined now.
Yeah, amazing. You know what, Rob, you that 3 month gap, I think was absolutely, now that you told me about it, I just realized that was a critical thing to try and do, because it sounded like you'd probably ran already to the end of the journey in terms of the recruiting game, but the easiest thing to do would be to just jump into another recruitment company. Recruitment agency 5, I think, might have just done you over, mate.
I mean, it's difficult because, I mean, that at that point, like, I had to do that. I had to take that sort of, like, push the reset button on the career and just go, like, what am I going to do? And so, I mean, joining Workable, for example, like joining a startup that early stage, that small company, you're taking a pay cut. And this is, like, I speak to a lot of people who kind of want to move out of recruiting and into anything else. And whether they come from agency or in-house, typically the biggest challenge is, can you take that step down, and usually short-term step down in terms of salary and certainly sort of overall earnings in a year to grow back up? So when I joined Workable, that 3 months that I took off, I was living with my parents at that time to sort of just give myself as much runway as possible to make that choice. I took about 50% pay cut to join Workable to get into that first step on the ladder in terms of a new career. And that can be difficult. Like, sometimes at this stage of life for me, I couldn't do that. But at that stage, kind of 20 something, not so many responsibilities, no mortgage, you can make that kind of move. But that's usually, I think, the people I speak to, is the sticking point is, can you afford to make this move? Or how do you have to change your lifestyle for 1 or 2 years to make that move?
Wow, really, really significant. You're about to say something, but let me just finish this point. Because two things that were interesting, and Joe and Michelle mentioned the same thing. There is a penalty for the career transition, a short-term slap that you're going to have to accept. And because you can earn quite well in recruiting, that could be a significant drop, or at least a significant potential drop, because everyone's hanging that OTE figure on, and you remember your last big commission check and all that kind of stuff. So you have to be able to take that. Chris has joined us. Amazing. Let me get to you in a bit, Chris. And so you have to take the mental step to be able to say, I'm going to take this slap, but you also need to build runway. And you know, you need to understand that there's a cash burn situation for you to do this, and you have to be sure. And that's probably one of the biggest blockers to keeping people into the industry, any industry that they've been exhausted by. And this is not just recruiting, by the way. I know friends that are accountants, they hate it and want to get out. They can't, because what do they do? You know, be an accountant in corporate, that's probably it. Or become a farmer, you know, like literally radical transition. So huge changes there. Okay, we're joined by Chris Raw. Chris.
I was going to say something to Rob. Rob,
yeah, go ahead.
Well done having the self-awareness to do that back then. Because, like, when you're in your 20s, it's difficult to really know what you want to do. And I just want to ask, I'm assuming that was the best move you've made in your career.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's self-awareness. Like, if you're as unhappy as I was in my job, you'd have to be too self-aware. It's just obvious day to day that you just really don't like what you're doing. And it kind of affects you, not just in work, like you're just not happy. I remember, like, when you got to a point where the Sunday blues start on Saturday morning, you're in trouble. That's an issue. Like, okay, well, once Saturday's over, I'm into Sunday, and then I've got to think about Monday. Yeah. I probably left it too late to make that move, but it was difficult knowing what it was you wanted to do next. I didn't know why I didn't enjoy what I was doing, because I got to work with really smart people. I got to work with really cool companies and candidates. So a lot of it was right. But there was something around going into a product company that made sense. And it's only really now that I've been doing it, or had done it for a few years, that I could spot what it was. And for me, it was in an accountancy firm. I just worked with accountants. They did different types of accounting, but they were all accountants. And in recruitment, it was the same. I was working with, like, a big room of recruiters, or at Michael Page, like a room of hundreds of recruiters. Yeah. And there's some serious upsides to that. But I realized what I was missing there was working with people doing different jobs. So working with marketing people, working with product people, developers, not doing those jobs, but just working with very different people doing very different roles. And that's what I enjoy. So I don't think I had that foresight then to know I was missing that. It was with hindsight I went, this has clicked. Why? That's what it is.
A critical bit of insight there. The role variety within your business that you're adjacent to, you're proximate to, actually has a big impact on the the job you do. Recruitment agencies are very strange businesses in many respects, because 99% of the people in the business are all the same. Very skinny businesses. Everyone's a biller. You've got a very skinny support team. They're almost like, it's a very strange business when you compare it to other types of company that have different fully fledged departments. So that is a very key bit of insight that, you know, Rob, thanks for sharing with the, on hindsight, but yeah, valuable for people listening in right now. If that's the scenario you're feeling, have a think how it might feel if you're interacting with different types of people. Okay, let's talk about Chris Raw. Chris, good to Hello. See you, man. God, look at those. The audio is amazing. It's all down to the setup you have. Chris.
Being bored at home.
You're making me look really bad.
You're that's moving right. house, though, so it's that's a good excuse, I think.
I was about to say, Rob, if you need to shoot off and you've got stuff to do, don't feel free. Don't feel like you need to hang around on this, but you're welcome to stay, obviously.
Yeah, no jokes. My mum's waiting to put the Hoover on to clean right. upstairs.
I'm not having the elder Mrs. Long causing any problems there. So, Rob, enjoy your house move. Good luck with your house move, and enjoy your new house when you get there.
Thanks, Sonia. Thanks, Adam. Have a good one, Chris.
Take care. Bye.
All right, quick one, Chris. Quick one for the people who don't know you. Who you are and what do you do? Quick intro to the crowd there.
So funny enough, you said before about like a strange transition to a farmer. That was my former job, actually, before I was a recruiter. random quote. But yeah, I used to be a farmer, moved into recruitment. So this isn't my first career change. Stayed in recruitment for about 15 years. I was joking with Google Dave yesterday on the phone that I've done a more of an orienteering challenge around the HR department, because I've been in recruitment, sourcing, employer branding, candidate experience, HR technology, and now I'm on the vendor side. So when you add all of those things up, it makes it quite obvious that I now work for a vendor, I think. But yeah, you don't set out with that kind of career path, I guess.
No, and you're now working for JobPal, right?
Yes.
Chatbot builder as what exactly? You've got a quite an interesting job for those folks, don't you?
So I'm head of customer success. So like customer success is like essentially working with customers to help them get the most out of the product that you've sold them. So I work a lot with customers to discover what their problem is, define that problem, and then help them figure out what their first value is, and then set out some milestones and how we set smart goals to achieve those milestones and essentially prove that the product is worth what we said it was worth.
So. Yep, fantastic. And this is actually a relatively new role, isn't it? Because I remember this emerging maybe 10 years ago, at the beginning of it, and it was just the realization that you can buy tech, in our case, HR tech, and it's not just going to work out of the box. You've got to have the implementation right. You've got to have the training right. People have got to be using it right. You've got to upskill the user to do it. So it's not like it's not a simple product like here's a hammer, you swing it and you hit a nail. No, it's more like a machine. You've got to be trained how to use the drill in order to get the best performance out of it. Otherwise, you're just going to complain about the drill. Okay, cool. Quick question for you, Chris. In terms of your transition out of recruitment into this vendor side, did you know that was ever happening, or was that a sort of just a happenstance? You got the opportunity and got it, or did you have the feeling the journey in recruiting as a recruiter was coming to an end for you?
Yeah, so I started to get an itch because I think, like I said before, I'd done lots of different things in recruitment. So I felt... On one hand, I felt like there was nowhere else to go unless I wanted to be a head of recruitment, which wasn't so much of an excitement for me at the time. And then I looked around and I actually assessed what I was doing in my last practitioner role. So that was essentially leading candidate experience at Zalando and also buying HR technology for them and building adoption programs to implement them properly on the customer side. And actually, when I looked at that role and looked at the core skill set, it's pretty much internal customer success. So I kind of, that gave me the confidence to go and start looking at what is out there on the customer success side. And obviously, customer success is in any technology SaaS business now. So it made it very obvious to go into HR tech and more specifically talent acquisition tech. And also, I used to be a customer of Job Pals, so it made it even more easier to join smooth. People I already knew.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was the kind of obvious move for me.
It's not a huge jump. I mean, there's actually bigger jumps that you moved within Zalando. There were probably bigger jumps that you made than going to Job Pal.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. Before that role, I was a sourcer, and I mean, the sourcers are still my favorite role ever because I think you learn so many skills that are just useful in life. And you don't realize this until after.
How to hack a database and extract.
Yeah, pretty much.
Skills, folks.
So that was a harder transition because I was moving more into like, I don't know. Well, first of all, trying to figure out what candidate experience was and learn that discipline, and then start to have an idea of how we define that in the company. So it was a lot more stakeholder management than I'd ever had before. And also the teams that I was dealing with, my main customer was the talent acquisition team, which was like 100 people. So I had to learn very quickly, how do you motivate people without actually leading them? So that classic matrix management thing and building programs. So, because, you know, when you implement, you build a use case for technology internally, and then, you know, you can say, oh, it's going to save this amount of money or this amount of time. You tell that the recruiter, and all they think is, I've got another system to log into. So you've got to figure out ways of how you can motivate them and help them engage with the product. And that's what I actually really love to do now. So it's quite a cool job.
Yeah, fascinating. Chris, I'm going to have to cut it a bit short, I'm afraid to say.
No worries.
A bunch of people coming on, and I'm really close to running out of time. But Chris, really great to hear from you on this. And I think this is one of these stories that will kind of continue to emerge, because demand for customer success is increasing on the mm-hmm. vendor side. And I think that the awareness that recruiters have of the transferable skills that they've built is increasing as well. Particularly if you're working internally with a complicated, you know, large TA team, there's sort of role differentiation in there. We're starting to find pathways out. It's maybe a good example of why a 360 recruiter may not be the best way to move forward for a career development point of view, because you end up just being a salesperson. But if you're able to kind of narrow down somewhat internally, then you've got to get yourself an opportunity that you may not even realize was there. So very interesting to get your perspective on that, Chris.
Can I just add one thing to this? If anybody's interested in doing the same kind of thing that Chris has done, moving from a recruitment team into a tech company, go and look out. Just keep an eye on those companies that appear to be growing, because with every 3 to 20 new customers they bring on board, they will create another customer success manager job. So that's who to go and talk to.
Just to add to that, I think a recruiter going into customer success, especially for talent acquisition tech, makes sense, because you've worked with tech, you've seen some of the issues with adoption before with getting technology to work internally, and I think you can take those lessons and it builds instant empathy and clarity with other clients.
Yeah. You know what? How do they investigate that? Is it a case of just scouting on LinkedIn or something? I mean, what is the mechanism to translate desire to outcome here?
As a sourcer, if I was doing this now, I would probably look at Talent Tech Labs ecosystem and search for all customer success people in all of those organizations and ask them questions.
Cool. And Talent Tech Labs produce a landscape, don't they? Like a landscape map. If anybody's got hold of that, just please share in the chat stream. That's a useful thing to have. Okay, Chris, listen, we're going to move on. Thank you very much. We'll
see
you soon. Great to have you on the show, bro.
Shona's Rakadenda.
I think that was the nice thing that he said, bro. Let me, I think that was German. His German's getting better. Chris is in Berlin, by the way. A Brexit exile, as a matter of fact. Okay, we're going to speak. I was hoping to get Geraldine on, but she's disappeared. I think that the time has kind of moved away. Geraldine was going to come on and talk about moving from recruiting to VP of people and that type of internal shift. So less about sort of working in an talent acquisition role, more about culture building and so on. I'd love to investigate that. Oh, she is there. Why can't I see her to invite her on?
On the chat.
I know, but I can't get the name. Okay, I think this is user Geraldine. You might have called yourself two different things.
No, she's there in the chat.
Can Can you invite? I know, but I can't see her on the invitation. I think she is user something else. So I'm going to invite this person on. I hope it's Geraldine. If it isn't, user 08E24365 is going to join
Grapefruit.
At some point, we're going to get some naked fellow, doing a chat roulette on us. I hope that's fine. Geraldine, I've just sent you over. I hope an invite for you to come on screen. But if not, I'm not sure what else we can do. It might not be her. I don't think it is.
It is.
Do you know what I'm talking about, though? It is. Someone's accepted it and trying to connect. Oh, yeah, cool. Geraldine's coming. All right, Theo and Martin, please bear with us. We'll get to you in a bit. I know it's taking ages. I blame... Who do I blame? Somebody. Not my fault.
Me is normal.
Yeah. I take no responsibility. Channeling my inner President of the United States. Not me. But I think we might have a problem with the getting Geraldine on. In which case, maybe we'll get Theo on instead. Sure. What I'm going to do is you should get it on screen, Geraldine. It's not a link. You get it popped on screen as you're looking at it to the effect of, accept or not. So don't close whatever pop-up that's coming on. Just accept that and you should be able to just come immediately on screen. Ex-recruiters, they love to talk. I think you're right, Martin, they do. Oh, by the way, if anybody has any questions for any of the guests, please ask them in ask a question section at the bottom.
Hurrah!
Geraldine, you're there. Great to see you, my dear.
Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you fine. Welcome to the show. Sorry, it's like all this kind of palaver. Thank you for your patience as well. I know you've been waiting to get on, so
no worries. Really great to be on the show. Like, thrilled to be here. Right, cool. Fire questions at me, hon. I'm ready.
Well, firstly, for the people who don't know you, Geraldine, can you just introduce yourself very quickly, who you are and what do you do?
Sure, yep. So Geraldine Butler-Wright, or G, is absolutely fine, far less formal and long name. I have just taken up a role with YourMD, or Healthity, as we're rebranding, as their Chief People and Culture Officer. I have a very varied background, so started off life working for the US government, UN, then have moved over into fintech, so work for PayPal. I've also worked in higher education, working with Imperial College, and then into startup scale-up land with Yo-Yo Wallet, so that fintech piece again. And also I do some advisory work with startups through a company called Antler, which I absolutely adore. So that's me in a nutshell.
Fantastic. And a big nutshell. So that's a hell of a career, Geraldine. But there was a big transition, wasn't there? Because all that PayPal, Imperial College stuff, you were talent acquisition all the way through that journey. How did that move into like a VP of people? Or is it still part of the mix? Is the VP of people basically an evolution of the TA role? Or is there a specialist TA person? And have you relinquished that function in the new role here?
I think TA will always be part of my heart and soul. There's no getting around it. I absolutely love it. But actually going further back to when I started off my career, HR has always been part of my role in some way. So that would be something I'd really say to any recruiters out there who are wanting to transition into that people HR function, is look around you and see what kind of duties that you could pick up or work shadowing with your HR colleagues to start familiarizing yourself in that space, so that there'll always be some kind of opportunity in-house, if you are in-house, that is. It sort of gradually transitioned. So when I was at Imperial, I started doing more work around sort of talent. ATS is, funnily enough, we did a huge ATS and sort of a realignment of what our recruitment process was and HR process was when I was there. And then going into a startup environment, often the first need for an HR person there will be a huge focus on talent acquisition.
Yeah, of course.
So it's brilliant if you want to make that transition, and then you can sort of learn and evolve and pick up other pieces of the HR function as you start moving and growing within that role. And you can do that whether that's through sort of education, so maybe doing something like a CIPD or doing other HR diplomas that you can do, but also just educating yourself by, you know, looking on various websites like ACAS, UK government websites. So really getting down to the basics of nitty-gritty of it, listening to podcasts, going attending, you know, webinars like this. So there's a lot of information out there that can help support you as you grow within that role. And there's nothing just like practice, right? And using your network that you have around you to really kind of get their feelings and thoughts on what it's like to develop a career in HR.
Quick question for you, for people who are watching this, Geraldine, that are currently recruiters. And by the way, HR people and recruiters both watch the show, I think. Maybe more predominantly on the recruiter side. In-house recruiter, what are the big things that they need to know before they dive into HR? Like, what are the cultural differences that they need to be aware of before they, you know, dive into this and think it's a great idea?
Yeah, so I think the fortunate thing about being a recruiter is you're really starting that relationship with that future employee at the best possible time of their employment relationship. So I call it like the Disney days, right? Everything should be beautiful when you're having that initial sort of interaction with that company. When you sort of go through any employment relationship, or any relationship for that, they're going to be parts where there is ups and downs. And when you go into the wider HR space, there are some of the more difficult and sometimes unpleasant conversations that potentially have to happen, right? So it's being prepared for that, which is really important.
You've just introduced something I didn't realize, but is so evidently true. The interaction you have as a recruiter is all joyous because you've just got this person a job. And then you move on to the next person to get them a job. But with HR, your interaction with the employee might be negative, very negative, because they're complaining about something.
Might be. I mean, you've got the performance relation piece. You've also got, like, if somebody's got to exit the organization, how are you going to do that in a very humane way, right? What's working, what's not working? Or you might actually be dealing with people who are making a complaint about something actually really serious.
Yeah,
you know, that you have to deal with, or maybe it's a personal issue. So there's actually quite a few coaching skills that come into that as well, which is quite interesting, which is a piece that you can really add to your skill set.
I wouldn't have said recruitment is a joyous job. It's mostly rejection. It's mostly letting people down. So I think you've probably got the ups and downs skill set to be able to go into HR.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. But for the most part, at the end of that, say, recruitment activity that you're doing, there's going to be a positive. There's going to be that we're getting somebody on board. Whereas actually, in some HR situations you encounter, the end might not necessarily be 100% positive. Somebody may have to be let go, for instance.
Yeah.
But also, sorry, go on, Hyun.
You go ahead, Geraldine.
No, and as well, actually, there's the sort of the nuts and bolts of HR, which actually can be quite dry at times, in all honesty. So, you know, when you're having to get like really under the hood on budgets and pensions and healthcare and regulations and employment law, etc., I see sort of people in HR functions like front of house or front office and back office sometimes, they both need each other. But you really have to kind of engage the brain in a different way and train the brain in a way to cope with those moments that aren't necessarily that fun and interactive per se. Might be your thing, might be, but that's something I know I had to get used to. And actually, I really like it now. I geek out over a spreadsheet, but when I started, not so much.
Yeah, that you can train, but there's a shocking shift in terms of the types of things you've got to think about. Which again, you know, recruiters are well to be aware of. That's fascinating. The two things I pick up from this, Geraldine, is the fact that your main interaction with an employee is at different stages of that employee's time with the business. Right at the beginning, and the emergent part, and then of course, as everyone's career is going to move and at some point move out of the business, it intensifies as HR towards the exit point, which may be acrimonious. So that's fascinating insight. Cool. Okay. What would you say in terms of people who are thinking about making this shift? Like, what is the misconception about HR that needs to be addressed? Like, now that you've kind of put both feet over, you know, the barrier, and you know both parts of it, what's the kind of thing that recruiters think that HR about HR is true, but you think is actually incorrect? It's a misconception.
Well, I think HR, in its traditional sense, can be, you know, rather than human resources, human remains, right? So it's all about kind of like drudgery and telling people what they can't do, rather than being like a business partner enabler. And I think a lot of the skills that recruiters have, those soft skills, getting to know a business, getting to know what makes people tick, is really nicely transferable over into the HR or people space. So I wouldn't be, it can be quite daunting if you're trying to make that transition. Or how will I know all these really important legislation updates, et cetera, et cetera. Just be bold, do your research, use your network, talk to people, and try and educate yourself as much as possible to see if it's going to be the right decision for you to move into that role. And if anybody's interested in making that transition over, just get in contact with me on LinkedIn. I'm more than happy to have a chat in more detail. I love talking about this kind of stuff. So you know what? It's very much an open invite.
Yeah, if people should take that up, because that's a really, really generous offer to make. And sometimes you just need that internal insight, don't you? Someone who's gone there before, just to show you the way and give you, you know, the truth of what that journey looks like. Yeah. Geraldine, listen, we're going to have to move swiftly on. I do beg your pardon, but we're well over time. And we're still good. Theo and Martin to bring on. So I beg your pardon on this, Geraldine, but great to see you. Great to see you doing well, and you know, things are happening perfectly with family and everything as well. So congratulations on that new job and everything. Bless you and I catch up when we've got a little bit more time.
Love to. Take care. All the very best, everyone. Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to move swiftly on, Adam. I hope that's okay. But you know what? I didn't even realize that was actually kind of profound for me. The idea that your interactions with people are at different ends of the life cycle, and therefore their attitude is going to be different. You know, their enthusiasm is going to be different. All those types of things. So super interesting. Okay, moving on to our final two guests, folks. Thanks for staying with us, everybody. The reason why I've left these two for last is not because they're best, even though they may argue the case, is because these people have recently made this move, like super recently, first move out. So firstly, Theo Smith, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are and what do you do?
Yeah, so I head up recruitment at a company called NICE, National Institute for Health and Care Excellence. Well, that's what I did do up until the end of this month. But yeah, I've worked in recruitment for some time now. I've done executive search. And like Adam, I did recruitment marketing at TMP Worldwide. So I've kind of had my, foot in many different elements of recruitment over the years.
And where are you going to now, Theo? What's the journey looking like now?
Well, this is it. This is the big news. I've not, we've not really talked publicly about this, but I'm going to Zinc Work. To join Charlotte, Luke and Sanjeev, which is incredible. So reference and background checking, they've digitalized it, and the technology is built on blockchain. So the candidates own the data, which is the big thing I'm excited about. A candidate's own the data. You know I love your neurodiversity and around empowering individuals, and I think there could be something incredible in this. So that's kind of been the big motivating factor for me.
Well, brilliant.
I'm also very interested in data as well, and who owns data and where it sits on the internet and what people do with it. And so that makes complete sense to me as well.
Yeah, great. And congratulations on that move, Theo. We're going to come back to you in a second because I want to just explore the psychology of you making that move. But let's move to Martin. Martin, can you hear us?
I can. I've got a really bad connection, so I hope you can hear me.
Yeah, it sounds perfect. Yep. Martin, quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what do you do, what did you do, and what are you doing now? What are you going to?
Yeah, what am I doing now? That's a good question. Who am I and what have I done? So, Martin Poole, I've worked in recruitment now for, almost 20 years. Don't be put off by the youngish good looks.
I think we have lost. Oh.
That there's miles under this bar. He then worked in-house for well over kind of 12, 13 years. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Martin.
You can. Yeah.
I think that's a really bad line, isn't it?
Been involved in a range of different...
Hey, Martin, I think it's a really bad line. We didn't get much of that at all. But no worries. Let me tell you, let me see if I can re-invite you back or something.
Let me drop out.
Adam, I think you got to go as well, don't you, man? Great to see you. We're running over, but I want to spend a few more minutes with these two. And we'll see you next week, Adam. So thank you very much. Have a good weekend, sir.
Cheers. Well done, Theo. Good move.
All right, cool. Well, listen, Theo, now it's just you and me, very intimate. I want to ask you the question, because you've been a recruiter for such a long time. And you know, if we rewind back like 3 months, people looking at Theo Smith, I can see recruiting going forward, maybe more community stuff, more different things or whatever. Didn't actually see moving vendor side. So when did that happen? How did that sneak across to your mind to think, okay, maybe this is a good time to make this move?
So this has been going on in my mind for some time. I mean, many, many years back before I joined TMP Worldwide, I was talking to investors about business ideas and things. So it's always been there in the back of my mind, and not necessarily technology driven, just kind of that entrepreneurial mindset. So that's kind of been sat there on the one hand. And then I've ended up after leaving TMP Worldwide just before they were acquired by PeopleScout. I joined as a consultant, a public sector, an arm's length body. Nice. Didn't really expect to stay there, but I ended up staying there for 2.5 years. So over that period of time, what I've tried to do, and this may be useful for other people, is I tried to look, okay, I love recruitment. I love some elements of that work. But over here, I was getting involved in the RL100. I was meeting loads of tech startups through that process. I got involved with Alan Walker and Chat Talent. I was going to big events. And basically, I was starting to go, okay, well, this bit over here, the bits that I enjoy, there's a whole load I don't enjoy here. And then there's a whole load of other stuff that I'm doing that doesn't fit my current job almost. And it was that stuff, the talking, the engaging, the kind of the being, you know, the inspiration for recruitment and what have you, the neurodiversity, and then technology being the future. And how can I get involved in that? And how can I help an organization scale? So that's happened over a period of time.
Let me interrupt right and step in right there, Theo, because there's a really important point that I think you made there, which is get involvement into the community actually can help expose these opportunities, can't it? Because if you're just locked in a career, it doesn't matter if it's recruitment or anything else, and you're not getting outside of that little box you're in and not talking to other people in the business or not talking to other people in the industry, then you might not see alternative ways out. But as you say, you got involved in different communities, you got on the speaker circuit, you start following things that you're passionate about, the neurodiversity angle, all of these things start happening. And before you know it, opportunities start emerging. At one comes like zinc. So fantastic. Good lesson for people who want career diversity. Get out of the box of the job, interact with other people in the community, and things will emerge. Martin, let's go to you, because I think we've got you, and I want to get a hold of you before the internet drops out on us. where have you gone to now? Because you've moved vendor side very recently, haven't you, Martin?
Yeah, I have. This is week two, so it's very fresh, and still trying to get my head around it as well. I've made the move and joined a really exciting business called Wanna, and this kind of comes back to what Adam was saying at the beginning of the conversation. So the Andrusine Horowitz article that you shared last week around deep job learning is deep job platforms is exactly what I'm going into. Wanna is very much focused on new and emerging tech and is setting up a community platform for exactly those kind of folks. So my role now is very much focused on kind of bringing awareness to that particular platform and focused on not just the recruitment community, but also, you know, the CTO community, the CFO community as well, because this ultimately is going to provide a cost saving, we hope. But it is going to turn recruitment on its head a little bit. You know, it is safe to say that the platforms that we've got out there at the moment, they are diluted. They really are. How much value are they really adding? So, you know, for me, that bit's really exciting. The other bit is it's a startup as well. And there's always been that thing in the back of my mind, which is the what if, the opportunity to join something new. And as I said, you know, what we're day 10 now, and I've not looked back. It's been absolutely brilliant. It's been a brilliant ride in the last 2 weeks.
Let me capture a few things right away because you're so fresh with it, Martin. I can give you another 2 weeks. You're going to be like a veteran in startup and you'll forget what it is like now. So tell me what are the things that you have realized that you didn't know about business having moved to this company that, you know, because recruitment is a very complicated and a deep job, but it's also sometimes a bit narrow in the sense of, you know, it's very focused on what you're doing. You're acquiring people to the job. Now you're doing market development, you're doing biz dev, you're doing all these types of different stuff. What kinds of things do you think are gaps in the recruiter's knowledge right now about this different type of role that you're doing now?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think the thing that's really come to the fore for me has been thinking about almost kind of operational excellence. So the thing about a startup is, yeah, everyone's really busy trying to do stuff. And one of the reasons why my CEO kind of brought me into the business was, firstly, I've worked in-house for a long period of time, so I understand the psyche and the understanding of what an in-house recruiter goes through. And you're absolutely right; the primary focus of that individual is to go out there and source and find people. But you don't necessarily. You know, some people will think about the recruitment process, but you don't necessarily think about the wider business process and the impact that you are having on that. And my role has got an internal focus as well as an external focus as well, which has been brilliant. And and the conversations that I'm having are marketing conversations. They are conversations around operations, around sales, about recruitment as well. And it's that variety which actually makes it really, really appealing.
Yeah, very interesting. Going back to you, Theo, you've got a new job over at Zinc. Remind me what that job is. I mean, what was the brief? What's your mission in the new thing? Because this is also very interesting for people who are listening and thinking, oh, I would love to work in a startup. Great. What kind of job in a startup? So what are you going to be doing for those guys?
So first of all, I've got to give credit to them because what they've done is they've not taken the obvious path and they've taken risk. I hope it's a good calculated risk and they're going to really benefit from it. But the reality is that I am not that person, i.e. the job description. If you look down it, there are some elements that are relevant, but there are some pieces missing. And I think, you know, my role is on paper, it's VP customer acquisition. But actually, you know, because of the nature of the organization, its direction 2.5 years in, you know, where they want to go over the next couple of years, it's customer acquisition, it's customer experience, it's customer success, it's whatever else. It's a bit of knowledge and support around the development of the technology, where it goes next. Whatever they'll let me get stuck in and get my hands on, to be honest, they'll probably be having me at arm's length going, stop it. Just go and do that one thing over there, please. But that's the reality of where they're at. And if I'm honest with you, Hung, I've actually started to hear this from more entrepreneurs, from more organizations, because I'm heavily involved in the tech startup space because of ChatHat and everything else that I do. So I'm starting to hear organizations really shifting their thinking around who they put into these types of positions. That doesn't mean they've started to do what some of the organizations like done, Martin and myself, where they're thinking, okay, we take people with good, solid recruitment backgrounds. But I think this now, you'll start to see a massive shift, especially as we start to come through COVID and organizations start to think, right, now we're going to invest, we're going to grow, we're going to grab this by the horns. So I could see more opportunities for people listening to this today, thinking, oh, hang on a minute, that could be a good group for me. I'd say now is the time.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you say this. And both of you have moved into like a startup type scenario. I think that's a really interesting type of company to join because as you say, whether even though there is role definition, simply the nature of the business means that those roles are going to change on a week to week, month to month basis. And it means that you've got opportunities to grow with that company. Whereas I can imagine if you joined a more mature business, that, you know, is structured, it's locked down, it's saying, hey, listen, we're looking for this person doing this. It's like more execution only. Whereas if you join a business at a more immature stage, you've got a chance to kind of mold it and grow with it. So that, I think that's something that's really worth exploring and just underlining. A lot of recruiters, you may not have a clear path if you're thinking about moving to the next thing, but you know maybe recruitment may not be the right thing anymore. But joining a younger business can sometimes give you, you can explore the path once you're in there. Go ahead, Theo.
Just very quickly on that point, and it's what Rob Long mentioned earlier, and it's about the kind of risk reward, right? I'm leaving one of the safest jobs in recruitment. I work for an arm's length body. They're very busy. They're very well respected. I'm in a job that is hyper secure, and I'm going into a risk reward role, right? We know the reality with the tech industry. They're doing a fantastic job, but a tech startup, you know, there's no guarantees, and there's certainly no guarantees for my job. So I think anybody out there thinking about this, you know, it's not a case of just going, what are they going to give me? There's a lot of risk that you've got to take psychologically in terms of your life, you know, the roof above your head and everything else. So I think you also got to be ready for that. And Rob was ready for that some time ago. I'm much long in the tooth. So, you know, it doesn't mean it can't be done, though. It can.
Yeah, I'd second that, by the way. I have a family, I've got a mortgage, and, you know, there's mouths to feed. So, this is a risk. And Theo, I'm in exactly the same position as you. You know, it's kind of risk and reward, right? But, yeah, what was the alternative? The alternative was for me to be sitting there to you know, constantly looking for another job, which in itself is soul-destroying if it's not going your way, right? And we know how competitive it is. That's how you started this whole conversation, Hung. I'd rather be doing something, and it just so happens that, yeah, I'm doing something. Yes, it plays to the kind of the core skills that I've got that are transferable, but I'm picking up a hell of a lot of new ones as well. And as you say, yeah, 2 weeks' time, it'll be a different job altogether.
Yeah, it's actually really important to explore this, because how you kind of get onto discovering these new opportunities can come from different directions, can't they? Like, you could be super frustrated like Rob was, and you know, he needed to get out somewhere and he did the research to do it. Or you could be like Theo, who basically had this kind of feeling a long time and he wanted to then eventually move. Or it could be a similar situation to you, Martin, where, you know, you have this ridiculous pandemic coming in, having this huge effect everywhere, depressing the recruitment marketplace and kind of forcing perhaps an earlier decision than perhaps you would have made in a different type of scenario. In that situation, when you're exploring job opportunities and you're knocking on the door, obviously flat market, when did you start thinking, yeah, you need to kind of do more adjacent searching and look at other opportunities outside of the classic internal recruiter job?
So I think, yeah, the situation kind of presents, I mean, my own personal situation was a little bit different in so much as, I was on furlough for a few weeks. The house is painted, the garden looks good. But you start thinking about, actually, okay, what's going to be the end result of this? And the obvious happened. Your mind starts thinking, and as a couple of people have already said, yeah, this is an opportunity that does present itself to maybe do that thing that you've been thinking about for a long time. It is, as I said at the beginning, if you caught it, it's the kind of the what if factor. And when I actually first came into the whole furlough period, I actually did some life coaching. And one of the questions that was asked to me, which is, you know, ultimately, where do you want to be and what do you want to do? And, you know, I had a long commute previously. I was working up in London. I lived down in Sussex. I didn't really want to be doing that commute every single day. I wanted to be working from home. The concept of working for a startup was really, really appealing, but I couldn't see how that was going to happen. So quite quickly, yeah, when I started looking for a new role, I was looking at alternatives. Now, this actually came about in a completely different way, in so much as I think my profile on LinkedIn was still saying I was working for my old company, and someone tried to biz dev me, my current CEO, and he spun the call halfway through and said, actually, do you want to come and join us? Which I did. So, I was lucky in that respect. But I do think, yeah, if recruiters are looking at that, and there are a lot, be open-minded. Have a look and see what other opportunities are out there. And now's as good a time as any to take the plunge, right?
I absolutely agree. I mean, we know, for instance, a lot of the government support schemes are coming to a head. That's going to obviously have a huge impact on not only impact on businesses. I'm sorry to say, it's going to be a lot of people who will be let go at this period of time. And it's smart to be open mindset wise rather than keep banging at the door and getting frustrated. Like I'm seeing it actually, which is I totally understand the frustration of experienced recruiters and kind of involuntarily looking for work, if that's the right term, and then getting increasingly annoyed about how bad the candidate experience is and all the stuff that we know already, right? But the harsh reality is that you've got too many candidates, probably not enough jobs and not enough courage to go for those jobs, and it's going to be tough sledding. So being smart for the opportunities, understanding where there might be some good places to look, and also being confident in your skills to transfer, you know, maybe that we heard about Chris Raw earlier, you know, I mean, transition that he made seemed to be super smooth. He was literally doing this very similar job, just on a different side of the fence. So there's actually multiple ways in which we could transfer what we know how to do in a slightly different context adjacent to the recruiting jobs that we've done. Okay, listen, this is like the longest Bring Through Live ever, but I want to leave it with two more things that you want to give. If there's a bit of advice you want to give to a recruiter watching this now who's thinking, you know what, I've come to the end of the road of my journey in recruiting, I want to do something else, what would you say to that person? Theo Smith, let's go with you first.
Yeah, I definitely think about the skills that you've got and that you're most interested in and what roles that they can translate into. And then to try and identify organizations that may be interested in those skills. So it doesn't have to be the job, right? It can be the skills where you feel an organization will see the value, and then how are you best going to present them to those organizations that are most likely to want to take them on?
Right, fantastic input. Basically, don't get obsessed with job titles, because that might cause you to have a stone wall straight away, because you know what can you do? Break it down one layer down to see what skills that you can do and what you enjoy, and then see how those skills are deployed in other job titles. Excellent stuff, Theo. Martin, one thing piece of advice you give to a person who's kind of looking at opportunities and thinking about it, a recruiter thinking about moving on, what would you say to that person?
Yeah, I mean, I have to echo everything that Theo's just said. I mean, I think you've got to kind of take it to that next level. I mean, it's showcasing that you have got these kind of skills. So whether that's your LinkedIn profile, whether it's your CV, you know, how many people are kind of doing quick sort of video bios at the moment. Yeah, do those things. Get creative around the information that you're having to share with people to showcase that actually you do have those skills.
Great point. You can't just sit there and expect the market to figure it out. You've got to really demonstrate, showcase is the right word. You could just open out a little bit of the stuff that you kept private and tell people what you can do, what you're passionate on, and you might get picked up by a CEO. I mean, one thing about tech, we're talking about tech startups particularly here, but tech startup CEOs are super hardworking, super entrepreneurial, super opportunistic. And they're the type of people that I think would take a chance on people that, you know, may not have the classic type of CV. So not a bad place for you to investigate, but doing it by showing something rather than just sitting there and hoping that someone's going to pick you up out of a database. Okay, that's about it. Guys, I could speak with you much longer, but we're running out of time. We had way too many people on this show. I do beg your pardon. The random experiment to get 16 people on the screen. Listen, I hope everyone enjoyed it. Thank you, Theo Smith. Thank you, Martin Poole. We'll definitely bring you two back on. Maybe it would be cool to check in on you two, actually, a couple months in, see how you're getting on. That might be a good update show to do. But good luck in both of your journeys, guys. I look forward to seeing how you get on. Of course, I'm here to help. So let me know if there's anything I can do on that basis. But have a good weekend, you two.
Amazing. Thank you
Cheers.
So much.
Thanks, Hung.
Take care. Okay, everyone, that's it. Thank you so much for paying attention. I really appreciate your time. This is the world record 90-minute Brain Food Live. So thanks to everyone who joined the show. Hope you got something from that. Thanks again to our sponsor, Codility. If you're looking for hiring, an assessment tool for hiring software engineers that is perfect for remote, codility.com. Check them out. I think there's a 14-day free trial on that, actually. So do check it out. It is probably the market leading product on how you assess software developers right now. Anyway, we are back next week, by the way. We've got an amazing show for you once again. We're going to be talking about video and live streaming. How do you become a recruiter for the post-pandemic economy? We know, for instance, that video and live streaming is going to be the way that we're going to start communicating. Phone and email starting to trend away. Video live stream starting to trend up. How do we get perfect at this? How do we get good at it? So we've got Louise Tryons of Crowdcast, the platform we're using right now. She's going to join us. Stephen O'Donnell is going to join us. He's an expert podcaster, live streamer, and all the rest. And also the awesome Jose Cadlets, the person who wrote an amazing book called The Ultimate Guide to Virtual Recruiting. And it goes through all of the tech stack, all of the processes, all of the techniques that you can use to become A-level, A-grade, A-plus grade recruiter in the virtual world. So anyway, join us for that. Other than that, I will see you all next week. Remember to follow the channel, by the way. You get updated and all the good stuff that's there to come.